The trick-or-treat sugar rush has yet to fade, and the holiday gift season already looms. At Publishers Weekly, this means the editorial elves have put together the year's best books list, and joining us to tell us more, as he does every Friday, is Andrew Albanese, senior writer for Publishers Weekly. And Andrew, welcome back to Beyond the Book.
Greetings, Chris.
So, as we say, we're just done with Halloween right now, and we're already talking about the best books of the year. What's on that list so far?
Yeah, that's right. So Monday's issue, we talked a little bit about it last week, but so Monday's issue, it's here. The complete list of Publishers Weekly's 100 best books of 2013. The books are selected by PW's editors from the nearly 9,000 reviews we published over the course of the year in the magazine and on the website. So you're a regular visitor to our offices here in New York City, Chris, and you have some idea just by looking around how many books we receive. It's more than 50,000 across all genres every year. And in addition to fiction and nonfiction, the 100 best books includes poetry, religion, mysteries, thrillers, cookbooks, lifestyle, health, parenting, crafts, hobbies, comics, you name it, science fiction, romance, across all genres. So I'm not going to ruin anybody's enjoyment of the list. I'm just going to direct readers to the PW website to see the top 10 and the other 90 books. But I'm going to add a couple of quick notes. First, we do pick a top 10, but I'll remind readers that we don't actually rank them. And, you know, I think that's a good thing because you know how hard it is to say one book is number one on the list and the next book is number two. That's sort of an artificial distinction. What really strikes me about this year's list, too, is the breadth of authors. We have debuts, we have old faithfuls, and also the breadth of publishers from indies to majors, and even some translations such as The Silence and The Roar by Nihad Sarris, which was published by Other Press and was translated from Arabic. So I'll just I'll just send you off to pick up Monday's issue or to check out the PW website for this wonderful list. And as you said, I know we just had Halloween, but it's not too early to start your holiday shopping, and there really are some great stocking stuffers on that list.
Right. Well, indeed there are, but you know, you can't stuff an ebook into a stocking. I suppose you stuff it into a Kindle, right? So there will be some of those bought this year, and we've learned some interesting things about ebooks and the ebook marketplace this week.
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, this week we saw the release of a report from the Book Industry Study Group that confirms that ebooks, as you suggest, are now mainstream means of consuming book content. However, it also means that what we see from the survey anyway is that the rapid growth of the format's early years are over. Indeed, ebook growth has flattened out from those days not long ago when we would regularly report triple-digit growth in sales, sometimes from quarter to quarter. Now, according to the survey, at the end of the second quarter of 2013, ebooks accounted for just under 30% of unit sales, and approximately equal to the fourth quarter of 2012. And while both ebook sales and unit sales, that's revenue and unit sales, have risen considerably since the first quarter of 2011, their market share actually dipped between the first quarter of this year and the second quarter. Nielsen's Joe Henry, who undertook the survey for BISG, noted that ebooks are in the later stages of what she calls the innovation curve, and they've now settled into reasonably predictable consumption patterns. Future growth, she added, is going to depend on improving the value perception of ebooks among those who aren't quite committed to reading digitally yet. So, you know, we're going to be diving more deeply into this report in the coming weeks, and certainly into ebooks on the PW website. But, you know, we've already seen some of the value adds that are beginning to bubble up. For example, Amazon's ebook bundling program, where they bundle ebooks with print. And that's something that 48% of respondents to the BISG survey said they'd be willing to pay more for. So I think we'll probably be hearing a lot more about that in the coming months. And of course, you know, we can't talk about ebooks without talking about Amazon. So I'll leave you with this. 67% of the ebook buyers who responded to the survey said their primary source for ebooks was Amazon. Barnes & Noble was a distant second at 12%, and Apple lagging way behind in third place with just an 8% share. Now, that is according to the survey. It's not ironclad data, but still an 8% share, not so good for Apple. So much for, you know, them kicking off a mainstream ebook revolution, which is what Steve Jobs has said was going to happen back when they were completing their deal to launch the iBookstore.
Well, indeed, sobering numbers for Apple, and they've had some sobering news throughout this year, and we'll return, as we often do on the show, to the Apple ebook price-fixing case and the litigation there. We've also, again, had some news this week, and tell us more about that.
Yes, so most notably, you may have seen on the PW site this week that we reported that the damage estimate from the states in the consumer class part of the case was put at nearly $308 million. That's about $90 million more than the expert witnesses had first estimated in the case. And after trebling, where the judge can actually triple the final damage award, the money damages Apple's now on the hook for, we at least have a high end there now. That's $924 million. Now, a few things. No one expects Apple to pay $924 million. I'll even go out and say it. They're not going to pay $924 million in damages. We know that. But still, you know, Apple is facing a pretty big number after its damages trial, and certainly bigger than the number it was tagged with before. So I'm now at work on a piece for next week that'll be on the website that gets sort of behind those numbers. And, you know, some industry observers this week sort of lamented that this new damages figure was magically inflated. But, you know, in looking at the formulas, it turns out that it's really not magic. It's actually math. So the new figure was constructed by a Stanford economist named Roger Noll. And while the previous estimate was done by a University of Texas professor, Abraham Wickelgren. Wickelgren used a formula that had some key differences. Most obviously, Wickelgren's estimate was done before the trial began, and it was created for the purposes of determining a settlement amount with the publishers. And thus, it contained a variable that Noll's calculation did not. There was a risk assessment that was added into his figure. After all, the case could have been lost. So, you know, he had to factor in what a good figure would be to actually settle for. Noll's job, on the other hand, was simply to calculate the total damages number, and he had a little bit more complete data to do so. In all, the data that he gathered showed that the five settling publishers generated in total about $1.5 billion in ebook revenue over the last 2 years. That, too, is a pretty big number. Now, you can look for more on this in the coming week, especially as we near a December 6th. Final approval hearing for the publishers and their settlements. Now, that hearing could prove to be a lot livelier than the last one, but if the judge approves the final settlement on that December 6th date, we're looking at $166 million in ebook credits that could be released to consumers, and could be released to consumers right during the holiday season. I know some best books that would be good for purchasing then, but then you also have Apple looking at, you know, hundreds of millions more being pumped in, possibly in 2014 if their damages trial is decided. So we'll have to see what that does to the BISG's survey figures next year.
Well, 2014 could be quite a bonanza year then, and a bonanza in a way Apple would never have anticipated. Andrew Albanese, Senior Writer for Publishers Weekly, thanks for joining us.
You bet, Chris. Thank you very much.
Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center, a global rights broker for the world's most sought-after materials, including millions of books and ebooks, journals, newspapers, magazines, and blogs, as well as now images, movies, and television shows. You can follow Beyond the Book on Twitter, like Beyond the Book on Facebook, and subscribe to the free podcast series on iTunes or at beyondthebook.com. Our engineer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. My name is Christopher Keneally. For all of us at Copyright Clearance Center, thanks for listening to Beyond the Book. Thank you.